Its influence on the affairs of planet Earth, I think from the beginning of its recorded history, certainly up until now. And tonight we have some information for you to really chew on, if you will, a little bit, about the reality of the extraterrestrial on our nearest planet. Well, I'm not talking about Venus or Mars, I'm talking about the moon. Would you believe that there are things perhaps going on the moon that defy explanation in any other terms other than the extraterrestrial is up there kind of rummaging around, doing things? Well, our guest tonight certainly thinks so, and he has some guests for it. I want you to say hello and welcome to Open Mind, Fred Steckling. Fred is a researcher and an author of a book of alien bases on the moon that's cram-packed with some incredible photographs and an awful lot of research. Fred, why did you get in to, and where did you get the idea that there are alien bases on the moon?
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank the many people that have written to me since I was on your show last year here.
Mm-hmm.
And the many letters I have received are very favorable, although there have been some which are not.
We always get that.
Naturally, because it's a controversial subject, and one has to count on that. To start out with, I've always been interested in astronomy and aviation. And I have studied the moon with several different telescopes for many, many years. Approximately 15 years back, I used a 12.5-inch cave reflector. And I've noticed already then that something was going on the moon that that cannot be explained. Lights, flashing lights, and often moving from one crater to another.
The lights do dance around, from Tycho to Archimedes to all of the other craters on the moon.
Right.
And there's no real reason for that in a natural kind of way. There's no swamp gas up there, is there?
Well, no, it couldn't, because as we are told, there's no atmosphere, so gases could not stay in shape and move around like that, and especially to be seen from Earth from such a far distance. But with all the sightings that we had, including my son, which is here with me tonight, we observed three immense objects in the crater Archimedes many years ago. And after examining our lunar charts, none of such objects are recorded in there. So we knew that whatever we had seen was real. It was in that crater, parked on the bottom, on the floor of the crater Archimedes.
What were the dimensions of these objects?
Oh, miles and miles long.
25 miles, 30 miles?
Approximately 25 miles long. And
how wide? 8,000 feet? 10,000 feet?
Probably a couple of miles wide.
Like a cylinder?
Like a cylinder, yes. And there were three of them in Archimedes. And naturally, when we started our space program with the orbiter, lunar orbiter, first with the ranges and the lunar orbiters, I was curious to find out what we have photographed there. And after getting in contact with NASA in the late 60s, I obtained their microfilms from the Apollo landings and catalogs and studied over 10,000 photographs carefully and then ordered these photographs by number, enlargements, and picked out those for my book, Alien Bases on the Moon.
Now, Fred, certainly NASA officials are looking at these photographs, too. Why aren't they seeing these things and reporting them to the public? Because if there are alien bases on the moon, isn't our government going to tell us about that?
I don't think so. Not just right out there. Because, you know...
Amazing. Why not?
Well, you know about the UFO situations. We have had them with us for so long now, and we have never really received an official statement. Perhaps a national security, perhaps a military cover-up. There are many suggestions why this has not been told to the public. Perhaps they are afraid the public would panic when they are told that, well, we went to the moon and we've seen immense objects, immense vehicles moving around, not built on Earth. Then the people may be frightened. That's possible, although I don't believe so. I think the people should be told what we have found up there.
Well, since you were here, there have been a number of the Apollo astronauts on KABC. Pete Conrad was one. Michael Jackson asked him about it. Pete Conrad says no. That's a lot of baloney.
Hmm.
That nothing like that happened. Michael even read him a little bit of the transcript where he was describing an object that was flying along with them that just took off in another direction. And mm-hmm. Conrad said, well, we were just joking with Houston.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, for 2.5 hours, this joke took up an awful lot of their time. Why are the astronauts not coming clean? We've asked Edgar Mitchell about some of the incredible pictures that were taken on Apollo 14. And he says, well, that's just a lot of hooey. We didn't see anything up there.
Well,
why are the astronauts not coming clean?
They're military men. They are high commission officers. And they have their responsibilities and probably were ordered to secrecy. And there are many experts that have admitted they have seen something up there. I'm sure you are familiar with Mr. Chatelain's, Maurice Chatelain, who wrote the book Our Ancestors Came from Outer Space.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he was a government scientist or NASA scientist in charge of Apollo communication. And in his book, he states quite openly that our Apollo flights have been trailed by UFOs to the moon, that we had them there on the moon when we landed. And why would such a man, with so much knowledge, make such a statement? He must have, sure, have first-hand information. Like when I give you an example here. Donald Sistra, chief of NASA publication in Washington, D.C., made this revealing statement. During the Apollo manned flight missions, there were sightings from the spacecraft which our astronauts were unable to explain.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, if the astronauts have now a different explanation, well, that's up to them. We know we are not told the truth about many things.
Well, frankly, it sounds to me like when the astronauts try to explain things, what we're hearing is a debriefing piece of rhetoric that they are supposed to tell.
Mm-hmm.
And they will tell it if they're on these microphones or anybody else's microphones. Why?
Well, I don't know. Some time ago, I met Dr. Fred Bell, who also worked for NASA, and he obtained my book, and he liked it very much. And I was told by people that know him quite well that he was going to support it. And Dr. Bell stated, the astronauts have kept silent about UFO encounters because they are trained to believe it is a matter of national security. And Dr. Bell admitted that he had seen photographs of UFOs taken by the astronauts. It is generally accepted by the scientists that the government of Earth hesitate to admit that we really are defenseless against advanced beings from another planet. So, you see, that's how the wind blows.
Hmm. An associate of mine, who I have a great deal of confidence in, spent a whole afternoon with Admiral Alan Shepard and asked him point blank. And with no emotion in his face at all, no twinkle in his eye, Admiral Shepard denied that he was aware of anything other than what they expected to find on the moon.
Hmm. Well.
And this was in a very private conversation.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you believe? Do you believe that we are told the truth?
No, I don't.
Well, okay. Me either.
I have seen a lot of evidence to the otherwise, but I do want to point out that the astronauts themselves, that the NASA officials, for the most part, although some now are beginning to talk in other areas,
mm-hmm.
That the presidents of the United States, that the Congress of the United States, the members of the Defense Department, that our government is not telling us anything. Now comes another question. If they're keeping it a secret, it is probably one of the few secrets that our government has ever been able to keep. Somehow or another, secrets are not very well kept by the United States government, but this one is.
Not really, because if it would, then books like mine and other books on the subject.
And George Leonard's, yes.
George Leonard, somebody else is on the moon, and then another gentleman which I know also, Moongate,
mm-hmm.
Bill Bryan. They have collected evidence that there is something going on. And if we would have a total blackout of information, everything classified, that would be impossible even to gain this information that we have received. So I believe that there is a cover-up, but not as severe as most people feel, that the information is available, the pictures are available, if you know where to order them. And
are the pictures you order now any good?
Well, that's another matter. I've received many, many letters. I'm in contact with amateur astronomers from all parts of Earth, and I received very nice letters from them. As a matter of fact, some gentleman here from from Los Angeles writes to me. He says, thank you very much for receiving your book. I enjoyed your appearance at the Open Mind program, and he enjoyed my book very much. And he is making me aware of this immense cover-up of the fact that in the Sea of Crisis,
mm-hmm.
in the Cape Agaram Sea of Crisis, is an immense structure. And this structure is so miles in size and looks like a combination of a Van de Graaff and a generator and a Tesla coil, kind of a very large tower with a huge ball on top.
Mm-hmm.
And I have seen it myself, although it's very difficult to photograph.
Mm-hmm.
And I know what is there. And he says to me, this gentleman, he says, the photographs that he has ordered to confirm his observation are sometimes retouched to delete these structures. Okay, so he makes a statement. I've never made that statement that NASA retouches photographs, but I'm hearing it from other researchers that do compare the photographs and the observation.
Well, we know that at Greenbelt, Maryland, that they have a very large department there that
yes.
does nothing but retouch photographs. I mean, that's what they're there for.
I've seen it. I visited Greenbelt, Maryland.
So we can say unequivocally that NASA retouches government domain or public domain photographs so that you won't see them. Now, you can order some of the vintage photographs of 1976, 1977, and they will show you one thing. You can order them today, the very same photograph, and the shadows are longer. And we are being lied to by NASA.
Well, during the late 60s, I was invited to go to Greenbelt, Maryland. And we spoke to 22 scientists and showed them UFO movies and motion pictures of them.
Mm-hmm.
Not only movies that I had received from people, from other people, but also what I had taken in Germany during 1966. And when we walked by the retouch department, I asked one of the scientists, and I said, "Sir, tell me, what is this all for?" He didn't answer. And I said to him, "Well, if you guys have nothing to hide, then what is this all about?"
Mm-hmm.
You see. And incidentally, it is the Greenbelt, Maryland people from where I got my photographs and my microfilm.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I have my material from, you see.
That's true. That's where most of it comes from.
And I find that the early pictures that were released, they show more details of things, as you say, than pictures of today. Last Sunday, I seen a gentleman with whom I'm well acquainted. He came to visit me, and he showed me some fantastic findings that he had examined and on large lunar orbiter pictures. And he showed me also a couple of pages he torn out of an aviation magazine of the 1960s, which show true color. That shows craters. Some of them are beautiful blue in color.
Mm-hmm.
And in one crater, we counted 16 dome-shaped objects, all connected with tubes to each other, with a magnifying glass.
Well, if you listen to the transcripts of the Apollo conversation, they talk about the dome-shaped structures that are all over the moon.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we'll want to get into that. We're talking about the moon tonight. Fred Steckling is my guest. He's written an incredible book for you to read. It's called Alien Bases on the Moon. We'll be telling you how you can get that book in just a few moments. But there is a lot more going on the moon, it would seem, than most people think. It's not just green cheese. We'll be back in just a moment. That there is activity at this moment going on the moon?
I am very much convinced. As a matter of fact, the last 5-6 months, I used our 17.5-inch reflector to study the moon.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen in the crater Artistillus a large object that was there for 4 nights and 5 smaller ones that looked whitish in color and egg-shaped.
Oh, the X-drones, the famous X-drones.
No, not X-shaped, but egg-shaped.
Oh, egg-shaped.
Like
yeah.
chicken eggs, it's kind of a shape. And during one of these nights, there were 5 lights on the bottom of the crater plateau
mm-hmm.
that were flashing, giving off light. So also in the Sea of Crisis, I observed some flashing lights. And a few nights ago, I detected a tunnel between 2 craters that is not supposed to be there. Oh, it's about 20 miles long, and it looks like it comes in 5 sections.
A tunnel?
Yeah, some kind of like a tunnel or a tube.
A tube. Yeah. How do you see a tunnel, you know, is what I was thinking.
Well, a tube, kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of a long object, you know, that goes between these 2 craters. One unnamed crater and another smaller crater.
Hmm.
And we took some pictures, slides. They did come out quite good, but not as good as we wanted to. We have to experiment with more high-speed film
mm-hmm.
on this. So I know there's something going on right now on the moon, and it is not us, because I have maintained many times that there's no government on Earth that can build vehicles that are miles in length as have been observed up there, and economically it would be not feasible.
Well, you have some incredible photographs of a machine of incredible dimensions.
Yes.
Incredible is the wrong word. That means unbelievable. Let's say astounding dimensions. That is terracing away at the rim of a crater and throwing lunar soil high into the air, and it's trailing off for miles and miles behind it.
Correct.
And these are photographs that have been taken by our government, who doesn't want us to see them.
Well, I have over 120 photographs in my book, and the people that are interested to order this book, at the price is $9.95 and $1 for postage and handling, and it may be ordered from GAF International in Vista, California, P.O. Box 1722, and the zip code is 92083.
Now, there are some people, since you were here last, that have read the book that disagree with some of your readings of the movies, of the pictures, and perhaps they'll get a chance to come in and discuss that with you tonight, and we certainly welcome those who have looked at them and studied. I've talked to some of you, and it's your time to, you know, to draw it out with Fred. He's here. Let me give you the numbers. All of the numbers in Los Angeles end with talk, T-A-L-K. In Los Angeles, your number is 520. In the San Fernando Valley, 990. In Burbank, Glendale, and Pasadena, 244. Out in the San Gabriel Valley, your number is 448. Down in the South Bay, that's, that's Rolling Hills and Torrance and Manhattan Beach and Hawthorne down in there, El Segundo. Your number is 679. Long Beach, San Pedro, Paramount, Compton, Lakewood, Downey, your number is 639. In Orange County, if you're in the 619 or the 714 area code, your number is 750. And if you're in the 213 area code of Orange County, your number is 448. And we'd like for you to get in here and talk to Fred, whether you agree with him or disagree with him. If you've read his book, if you're just interested about what's going on the moon, we want to give you an opportunity to find out more about it. And we'll get to our callers and Fred Steckling in just a moment. Steckling is with me, the author of some of Alien Bases on the Moon. And we want to get to our callers, Fred, and we'll get to what is in the book. But we have Ken on the line. Ken, welcome to Open Mind.
Oh, thank you very much, Bill. Nice to talk to you. I've been a listener to your program ever since you first had Wendell Stevens on, and I'd like to thank you very much for a very enlightening show.
Well, you get a gold star, and thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. First, my first question for Mr. Steckler, I believe his name is. Steckling, I'm sorry. The question was, how can you tell if a object is a cylinder on the moon? Because a cylinder can be looked at from many different angles, and it can be seen as a circle, as a square, as a diamond, a rectangle, and many other geometrical shapes. How is he able to tell and differentiate from these shapes?
Well, it's difficult, I admit. If you have the proper conditions, seeing conditions, and you have a fine telescope and use about 800 or 1,000 power, you can make out quite some details, especially by studying the shadows. You see, if in the crater would be three objects which are flat, two-dimensional, like a piece of cardboard, for instance, you would not make out shadows. But when you can see shadows reflecting from these objects, then you know that they must be cylindrical, or at least square, you know. But they have to be high enough to cast shadows.
Hmm. Okay. I think I'd bring up here. I'd been able to meet with Apollo astronaut Jim Irwin,
mm-hmm.
who was, I believe, was on Apollo 15. And he had, I'm 16 years old, but don't let my age get in the way, because I'd been able to speak with him.
And, I have a lot of respect for 16-year-olds. They're like 25-year-olds used to be. So don't feel bad about it.
Thank you very much. I had been able to speak with this gentleman, and at our school we had two different assemblies. And I'd gone to the first assembly and spoke with him after that, and he gave me this, I said to him, have you ever seen any flying saucers going around the moon type of it, you know? Or maybe I didn't say flying saucers, I said any kind of alien spacecraft. And he gave me this militaristic, you know, that real diplomatic and yet very authoritative no sound. And I said to him, well, did you ever see any unidentified flying objects? And he said, yes. At which time it sparked my interest. And I said, well, do you have any information on this? And Jim Irwin, being a very religious man, in fact, if I remember right, he was climbing Mount Ararat in search of Noah's Ark.
Yeah, he was over there just last 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. He gave me some information, and it was kind of an interesting to me.
Now, he gave this to you personally.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And it was like little pamphlets made out by his high flight organization. And it talked about how astronauts have not seen 15-mile-long spacecraft that are 3 miles long or 3 miles wide. And it talked about how these astronauts did not see it. Now, what was interesting to me was that it had never entered my mind that they had seen these things in the first place. So why were they saying no to something that I had, it hadn't even entered my mind?
Well, it may have entered somebody else's mind.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. But I had gone back after the second assembly, during the nutrition break, I think it was, and I spoke with him further. And yet when I questioned further, I got kind of a smile on his face, and as if saying, well, you're on the right track, but I can't say anything, exactly what you were talking about. But, it's too bad that if this has occurred, that they had to be put in the middle of that kind of a situation. I'd gone down to Florida, in fact, this past summertime, to view the 8th space shuttle launch, and covering for a local paper down here in Orange County. And I spoke with Hugh Harris, who in the past has been the voice of launch control. Although I didn't confront him straight on about that moon issue, he seemed to be very forward-looking in terms of going back to the moon in the future. And I said to him, well, would you like to go back into space yourself, up in the space himself? And he said, certainly I would love to do that. And I'm sure there are a couple others around that would like to do that too, just to experience it. But, it's kind of interesting, the paradox that confronts us at this time.
They still get arm's length whenever you start talking about what's going on the moon.
Yes.
The astronauts and the NASA officials, don't they?
Yes. The other question I had...
Make it quick, because there are a lot of people stacked up in front of you here.
You bet. This is my last question. And the question was, if your guest has seen these shapes on the moon, how come other astronomers have not been able to see the same thing? Maybe perhaps they have, but...
Good question.
Well, there are many, many that have. I'm in contact, as I mentioned earlier, with many, many astronomers, amateur astronomers, and these people do not have to rely making a living for a university or for the state college or something. And they confirm my suspicion. They are sending me photographs, charts of the moon, drawings, pictures of objects that they are seeing all over the world, from Australia, from Las Vegas, from Wisconsin. These letters are just coming in. Now, why do the professional astronomers don't come out? I don't know. And perhaps they don't want to make waves.
Yeah.
They don't want to interfere with a security position they have. If they're working for a government-funded or perhaps even a privately funded observatory.
You see, the objects on the moon...
They have to be careful.
Right. These many, many sightings on the moon of these phenomena, they have been there since long, long before we even had a space program. As a matter of fact, I have a magazine here from NASA, which is called Apollo Over the Moon, published in 1978 by NASA from the government printing office. Mm-hmm. And they say here in the crater Aristarchus, which is 43 kilometers in diameter, has been the site of frequent transient lunar phenomena.
Huh.
Temporary changes in color, brightness, and then other little things that move around there. So even NASA states that in this magazine.
I have a feeling, Fred, that if someone want to build an observatory with a very good telescope on it in a very good location where it was away from the ambient light and the bad atmosphere, and it was devoted to studying what is going on the moon, and government money was not involved, or huge corporate money wasn't involved, that wouldn't want to have this happening also, that we would find a wealth of material there.
I think so, and I have found it so far just from the people that have small telescopes. Although the one that I have is 17.5 inch, and that's pretty large for an amateur.
Okay.
So it's a very fine instrument.
Ken, thank you very much. I appreciate you sharing that with us. All right. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind. Fred Steckling is with me tonight. He's the author of a book of Alien Bases on the Moon. He has the proof. He has the book. He has... certainly the conviction to get on our microphones tonight and talk to you. Some of you may not agree with him, and I think we have a caller coming up next which is going to challenge you just a little bit, Fred. And we're up for that, and we'll get to it right after this. Edward on the line. And, Edward, I'm seeing the word challenge come up all over my screen here.
Oh, you bet.
Okay.
You should have an overload, actually.
All right.
I am glad that Fred has come out with his book, because along with Somebody Else is on the Moon by George Leonard, we possibly have the only two existing works on that something strange is going on in the moon.
No, I think there's another one, Moongate.
Moongate.
Oh, yes. Well, I'll look that one up, too. Who's the author, please?
Yeah, Bill Bryant.
Bill Bryant. Thank you, Fred.
You're welcome.
Fred, my problem with your book is that it seems to be a self-published book, and it is very, very badly put together. I have in front of me a list of at least 32 plates that have wrong information on them. And in addition to those 32 plates, I have 49 photos that I can debunk as being nothing but hallucinations on your part, natural phenomena. And in front of me, I have 5 NASA publications, including a very heavy lunar orbiter photographic atlas of the moon. And I have been able to find 50 or so more of your photographs on these books that show that you did not do your research well and that you were ill-advised.
I tell you what, Edward, we don't have time to go to all 50, but let's take 2.
Okay.
Why don't you get your 2 most glaring ones, and you 2 jaw it out here for a few moments, okay?
Okay, let's go to plate 54, in which you say that there are 2 ponds or lakes on this photograph. And if you look at this lunar orbiter of the moon on plate 214, plate 24, you will find the full-size photograph of that which you used part of it, and it shows you that your ponds or lakes are strictly photographic emulsion printing errors. There are no ponds or lakes on the moon, and you devote a whole bunch of photographs and space to that. And all you had to do was look at these NASA publications to find that you were wrong.
Edward, wait a minute. You said there are no ponds or lakes on the moon. Now, you're going to have something to say that that's so. It's all right for you to say you don't think those are pictures of it, but you don't know that there are no ponds or lakes on the moon.
Okay, granted.
Okay, so let's keep it square.
All right, well, I know that you did your research. I did my research. Before these pictures went into the book, they were studied by military, ex-military people and some photographic experts. And they have found these things there that I have in my book. So I don't know what you have found. I know that in my book I mentioned that if 50% of the photographs I have in here will be accepted, that is pretty good. And if some of the pictures in here make the people think there's something going on there, that is pretty good.
I'm afraid you're using the wrong photographs. I have found many great photographs that should be looked at, but not the photographs that you printed. Let's go to plate 61. I look at the book again, The Lunar Orbiter, and I find...
Well, wait a minute, Edward. We didn't get that one all the way through. You say that was an emulsion...
Emulsion print error.
Emulsion print error.
Yeah. No,
all
no
of
way.
This book.
All right,
no way, not this picture, because it has been checked for that.
Well, I challenge to meet you anywhere you say with an impartial person, preferably Bill Jenkins, and I will show you.
I don't know anything about photography, so you need to get an expert.
There. I have one of those NASA books that also says that these effects are photographic emulsion errors.
Is that a good criterion?
Well, all right.
If you know anything about photography, the basicness is that you'll recognize that these are emotion process errors, and there's plenty of pages in this lunar orbiter atlas that show the same effects back and forth, in different pages. In plate 61, you use part of one of those split things to call that perfectly shaped crater and a 25-mile-long mount or hangar. Come on, give me a break, man. Look at the photographs in this book. You're wrong.
Well, did you study the shadows?
Yes. Oh, yeah, that's even better. You say in another photograph, I wish I had this little better reference so I could jump right to it, but you point to a photograph that has a dome casting a shadow behind it, and I find that that dome does not exist, number one, and that the shadow is a crater behind. There's no dome there. It's on the print, on the negative.
Well, what about... Well, they're on my pictures. When I ordered mine from NASA, that was on it.
I got the same pictures, and I can show it to you. There's that dome that you say...
When did you get your pictures, Edward?
Pardon?
What year did you get your pictures?
These are NASA publications. The Lunar Orbiter Photographic Atlas of the Moon is dated 1971, which is right at the beginning. Apollo Over the Moon, A View from Orbit, and that's a beautiful book. It was 1978, and I found many strange things there. The moon is viewed by lunar orbiter.
Are those photographs or are those with a rotogravure process? In other words, printed?
They're printed, of course.
Well, you see, I didn't use those. I have photographs.
Yes, you did. It's the same thing, man. I'm trying to tell you.
Well, the rotogravure process, when you put it in print, really does do a little thing to a photograph as opposed to looking at the photograph itself.
Yeah, but look, he says that some of these natural formations are clouds, that there are UFOs, that there are bridges, and anybody with some common sense can look at these photographs and see that this is wrong, that these are...
Well, I said it could. I never make a statement that there are definitely... I said it looks to me like this. It could be. You see, I left it open for the people to study these photographs, to instigate the public to get these photographs. I'm not hiding the fact that they should write to NASA, they should get these pictures, they should compare them, as many amateur astronomers have, and they have received photographs from NASA which are retouched and do not show what other pictures have shown that were ordered earlier. So there's a lot of confusion going on.
That is true, and what you say is true. But what I'm saying is that you should not have printed this book until you consulted with someone that knew about photography and had access to... I got these from the library, by the way, all these books. They're available to the public.
I think Fred pointed out that he did consult with a number of experts before he did the book.
Yes, I had a photographic expert that was stationed in Vietnam working for military intelligence, and he told me I have some very nice information in there.
Okay, so you do, and some of your photographs are fantastic, just like George Leonard's, but he also makes mistakes, and he calls things for what they're not, particularly on Crater Lobachevsky, where you call it a cloud, he calls it energy, and all it is a high albedo photograph of the moon, because in the Apollo over the moon, it shows that same crater beautifully sharp photograph, and all it is a high albedo.
What about the shadow, then?
The shadow is a crater, would you believe, with some lava bleeding out of it. That's all it is.
Albedo rarely ever forms a shadow.
Okay.
No, albedo is high reflectivity, and the moon is very highly reflective at different angles of the sun, and you get different effects at different times.
You see, sir, I respect your research very much, and also that you have criticism toward this book. I never expected that this book would be accepted 100% because it's a very controversial book.
But you have so many errors, particularly factual errors, where you have the wrong frame numbers, you have the wrong photo number, you have the wrong name for the crater. You say this crater is here when it's hundreds of miles away. You have incorrect info, and one you say it's Apollo 10 instead of 8. You have the photos reversed.
Some of it is part due to the publisher who put the book together.
Yeah, you did. It's a privately published because it's your address.
I did not manufacture the book, would you believe it?
Well, Fred, I don't want to take up all the time because there's other people that probably...
Well, I tell you what, Edward.
I challenge Fred to meet me anywhere, particularly tonight. I'm hot and heavy to show him all these books and how he's...
Well, going. Probably tonight is a little tough to do that. It's a long way back to
you.
Well, you
know how
to
reach
to
me. I have, my book can be ordered from Post Office Box 1722.
I got your book and I've written to you and... You don't want to get together with me because I'm going to show you you're wrong.
Hey, Fred, would you like meeting with Edward sometime? You two work it out?
If I have the time, I'm sure open for that. Yes,
yeah, sir. If he has the time. I'm making time. He's saying if.
Well,
he's here a couple of miles away. I could get in the car right now and show you.
Well, we have a show to do and do all of that sort of thing. I tell you what, you two get together.
I have your address and I have your letter at home and I'm going to...
In other words, you're copying out, Fred.
No, not really.
No, he's not copying out on you, but I want you two to get together and report back to me on what happened out of that meeting.
Well, could you give us a date to report to you by?
Well, I'll talk to Fred later this week, after you two talk and set up a time. Is that all right?
I hope they'll be this year.
Okay. Edward, thank you very much. You don't mind that. A little bit of controversy always works.
Right. It's on the moon. Studying the craters, some of them are so so neatly cut, perfectly round, that it seems to me very much like some mining is going on. Especially, I have one picture where you can see dust. You can see dust that is thrown out of the crater. And,
there's dust following the little X-shaped machines that are crawling on all over the moon, and we even find those X-shaped machines in the craters of Mercury, by the way. So
yes,
those X-shaped machines get everywhere. Okay, let's go to another question, another caller here. I believe we have Art on the line. Art, welcome aboard.
Yeah, good evening, Bill and Fred.
Good evening.
I've been working on some research for several years now, and I've gathered some proof, and I can prove right now that modern astronomy is several centuries behind where they should be on an accurate assessment of the celestial bodies. While the folks around here have been waiting for flying saucers and stuff to land, thinking that's the way advanced civilizations will get around in space, the real fact of the matter is that the really advanced civilizations are titans. They're the most gigantic, living, intelligent life forms there are.
Where do you get your information, Art?
I've been studying astronomy and some other things that deal with mysticism. I'm writing some research now that's going to reunite the supernatural side of the universe with modern science.
What kind of research and what are you using as the basis for, you know, these conclusions that you're passing on to us here?
Well, I found out a while back that seismic and climatic activity was intentionally created and intelligently controlled by the major celestial bodies.
How'd you find that out?
I was watching a pattern where certain events took place on certain days where it was set up in such a numerology pattern that only those who were being studying numerology would have noticed it. And I noticed, like, especially for the earthquake of Selmar. It happened on an all-numerology kind of day. A year was a nine.
So from numerology, you were able to come up with the idea that these were
I've also been able to predict where some of the errors they're going to wipe out as demonstrations of how much power they're dealing with.
Art, do you have a question for our guest here concerning his book, Alien Bases on the Moon?
Well, it's not more of a question as a comment. He's right now looking for little flying saucers and things that are tiny and things, but they can't see the forest for the trees.
Well, actually, he was just looking at the moon and talking about something that was going on up there.
I know, but what's really going on is this.
Well, I tell you, well, some other time, perhaps we can get into these things that you're talking about. We kind of like to zero in on alien bases on the moon. All right, thank you very much for your call. We're going to go on to Dorothy now. Dorothy, what's on your mind?
Yeah, hi.
Hello.
Okay, my question is, now all this talk, what was the location or area where these shadows were seen? You know, each of those things have numbers, may have names like the Maelstrom and all that, and if the astronomers send you these pictures, how come the agency that, once these things suppress, doesn't step in and say, hey, knock it off, do that?
Well, the
or
pictures...
just simply hit it up altogether?
Yes, well, I have not received any photographs from professional astronomers. The ones that I get are from amateurs, and they are, thanks heaven, still free to send material around living in the United States. So I'm getting this information from the freelance astronomers.
I see.
You see?
Mm-hmm.
And in my book, Alien Bases on the Moon, I have the pictures numbered, and the NASA numbers and the locations are given in most cases, unless I could not locate them during my research.
Mm-hmm.
Does that help you?
Well,
some of the craters, he's named some of them for you, Dorothy, already this evening. Archimedes, there's things that's going on there. Tycho, there's going on there. Crater Dakar, there are many things going on there. Dakar is a very interesting crater, by the way. It's the activity and the buildings that seem to be just popping up on the floor of the crater Dakar.
Do you think that could be...
We're going to have to go, hon. There's our traveling music. We're going to take a break for news. It's Open Mind. I'm Bill Jenkins. With me is Fred Steckling. Saturday night on KABC, I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind. Welcome aboard. Glad to have you, and very glad to have Fred Steckling, the author of Alien Bases on the Moon. And that's what we're talking about. There's something else going on the moon, and most believe. Huge machines that are at work moving lunar soil around, clusters of buildings, huge sculptured monoliths. I think Ron Evans used to refer to them as the clover leaves as he was flying over the moon, but later a close examination showed that they were fleur de lis, which is a very natural formation, of course, a fleur de lis. There are, according to Fred Steckling here, there are reservoirs of water, there are huge tunnels, or at least tubes laying across the surface of the moon. Perhaps there is some moisture up there, perhaps there is some atmosphere up there. A lot of things about the moon that we just have not been told about. And yet the American taxpayers spent billions of dollars to send a contingent of Americans up there. And what they found out, we have only heard part of it. Why?
Well, Newton's law of gravity was found to be an error when we explored the moon. And the public, I would say, has kept many years behind the latest research findings. For instance, in astronomical circles, there was belief that the neutral point between the moon and the Earth was about 25,000 miles. Well, when we got there, we found it was not true, and it was about 40 to 44,000 miles. That changes the concept of gravity on the moon alone greatly, and...
The gravity of the moon, or
the gravity of the moon.
Or the density of the moon.
Not only that, well, that hangs together. If the gravity is higher on the moon, about 50 to 60% of Earth, or half of ours, then the moon would be able to hold an atmosphere, and would hold surface water in some places, and support vegetation and so forth. And Bill Bryan, for instance, with whom I'm in contact with, he stated that this is true. And he said he observed a movie, which I also studied very carefully, when the Apollo astronauts sit there driving around with their rover, that electrical vehicle. He said it's impossible with the speed that they were driving around that this vehicle wouldn't tip over unless the gravity on the moon is higher. And he also stated that when the historical jump was made by the astronaut, he was supposed to jump 3 feet. He only made it 18 inches, which means the gravity is higher on the moon. And the flag was waving, the dust that was thrown up from the tires of the vehicle was drifting in the
atmosphere.
So-called non-existent lunar atmosphere. In a vacuum, this would never happen. So there's a lot of things that we haven't been told.
You know, I think when Pete Conrad was on with Michael Jackson, someone brought up to Pete about the fact that the atmosphere inside the spacecraft before they egressed the spacecraft and went outside was down to 1.5 inches per second rather than just pure vacuum.
Right.
And as if they knew that there was a little bit of atmosphere out there, and so they had to balance it with the atmosphere. Conrad said that that wasn't so, that that's just as far as their instruments went. But they did vacate the entire spacecraft of all air.
Ex-astronaut Brian O'Leary, he made a statement. He said that Pete Conrad and Alan Bean were playing using a metal cap, which was left over from an experiment, and they were playing Frisbee on the moon, and they were enjoying the how well this little Frisbee metal cap was flying around in the lunar atmosphere. That's what Brian O'Leary stated in his article.
So there may be some atmosphere up there. We've never been told about it. Why would something like that be hidden from us, that there is a little bit of atmosphere on the moon?
Well, the moon is a new frontier. If we set up bases there, most people know that NASA's lunar exploration was a military operation to at least 95%, perhaps even more.
Probably 100%.
Let's say 100. And that the military is always looking for new frontiers, new bases, new places to go. If they find life on the moon livable for our bases there, that would be a top-secret situation. They would keep it as much as they can from the public for their future experiments.
But according to you, there are other bases there for some other people who kind of feel that the moon belongs to them.
Well, yes, that's what Maurice Chatelain says in his book. He says that Apollo 13 was... had some problems there with their oxygen tanks, and he heard rumors, that's what Chatelain says, that they had an atomic device on board which was supposed to be detonated on the moon. Now, if somebody is there, which I'm sure there is, I'm sure they wouldn't enjoy such a thing.
That was a no-no. They crippled the spacecraft to the point that it could not land on the moon, but did let the astronauts get back.
They heard all kinds of strange noises on their radio, the transmissions from the area of the moon. As a matter of fact, the radio transmissions were picked up from the moon in vicinity all the way back in the 1920s, but it was kept secret then.
Yes, Kaplan. How do we get a hold of the book now, Alien Bases on the Moon? You want to give that address again?
Okay, Alien Bases on the Moon, it can be ordered from GAF International, P.O. Box 1722, Vista, California, 92083, and it costs $9.95 and $1 for postage and handling.
Okay. You ready to take another call? We have Mike on the line. Mike, what's your question for Fred Steckling tonight?
Well, one of my first questions is his credentials. I don't think I caught his credentials as a scientist, as an astronomer, as a photographer. It seems that most of the time you'd like us to believe that NASA's lying and the colleges and universities are lying and the major corporations are lying, but they have credentials. I'd like to know Mr. Steckling's credentials.
A credentialed person can shield the truth as well as a non-credentialed one.
I'd like to know Mr. Steckling's credentials. It makes him an expert.
Well, okay. First of all, I never call myself an expert. Okay, I'm a researcher, right? And I'm an amateur astronomer. I'm also a pilot.
How about your academic background? Do you have a PhD in astrophysics? Or...
No, I don't have a PhD, sir.
What's your academic background? I'm curious.
It's a high school and college.
What did you study in college?
Science and...
You have a bachelor's degree from college?
I have a degree from Germany. You see, I graduated from the school in Germany.
And what was your specialty?
That was science.
Science?
Yes.
So you graduated from college with like a bachelor's degree in science, and you want us to believe that you're more confident in determining what's on the moon with your 17-inch telescope than Caltech would be with their 42-inch telescope at Mount Palomar.
Mount Palomar doesn't look at the moon.
Oh, I see. What about, do any colleges and universities look at the moon? Are you the only one? It's interesting, you know, you mentioned amateur photographers. You give a great deal of credit to the amateur photographers. Aren't there professional photographers looking at the moon? Wouldn't it be a coup for a competent renowned professional photographer to show the things that you show? And one other quick question, why don't you bring your findings to reputable media, the Times, the LA Times, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, Time Magazine? Why don't you bring your findings to them and say, hey, there's stuff on the moon, let everybody know. It seems we have amateur stuff.
Right, that's correct.
Uh-huh.
They make me aware of where these things can be found.
Uh-huh.
For instance, the copious photographic lunar atlas or link lunar Apollo the catalogs,
mm-hmm.
They give me in publications where these photographs can be found.
Mm-hmm.
And they have been taken by professional astronomers. They have never openly admitted what these things are. They have to just stood away from naming it. Just like the astronaut.
But other words,
well, like I say, I have seen these things on the moon. I'm not the only one.
Why don't we read about this in Time Magazine? Why don't we read these in reputable publications, your findings?
Well,
why do we have to listen to it on Bill Jenkins' show?
Well, let's say that I'm trying very much to make these publications aware of this book. And I'm working on it. The book just came out. It's pretty new. So I'm working on that. And hopefully in time to come you will read it in such a publication.
I'd like to have some science editor, some professional, nationally accepted scientist, maybe sit down and talk with you on Bill Jenkins' show. Why don't you invite someone, Bill, from a college or university that has a telescope that's looking at the moon also, and have kind of like a debate going on here. A reputable scientist, a reputable person from a university. But again, it seems that, you know, universities and colleges are suspect, major corporations are suspect.
Well, you know, I've tried to do this.
NASA is suspect, but Fred Steckling is suspect, is he?
Let me give you just an example of how I've tried to do this.
Yeah.
I have, for instance, taken the incredible photographs of the head on Mars. I don't know whether you've seen those. Those were NASA photographs of this sculptured head on Mars, a face-up head with two eyes. And tears even coming down the face of it as it looks up. It's about a mile and a half across. And there's been some enormous work done on it by Vincent DiPietro and Don Molinar there in Greenbelt, Maryland. And have shown that to reputable astronomers. And they say, well, obviously that's just a natural formation. And as you look at the entire scape of where that particular natural formation is, which is a perfect sculptured face, there's nothing else like that. Plus the fact that at the base of it are two pyramids, and the angle of delineation between the two pyramids and the distance between the two pyramids and the face on Mars is almost identical to the two outside pyramids at Giza and the Sphinx. And they will tell me, well, that's a natural formation.
Mm-hmm.
And pyramids and this marvelously sculpted face is like looking at Mount Rushmore and saying that that is a product of wind and water erosion. So these very, very respected astronomers of which you're talking about are just not going to say anything right now. I don't know what it's going to take them to open up and look at it.
Well, you know, Bill, somewhere in this country, in this world, there has to be a respected astronomer that's... it just seems like, you know, you bring on the amateurs, the people without the credentials, the people who'd like to see what they'd like to see, and you never challenge them on your show with someone who's respected. If you can't bring anyone on your show that's respected to deal with these people, it's because they're laughing at these people.
Well,
and you make this sound like it's the truth. And, Bill, it's just one person's belief that there's something up there.
Well, there are a number
truth.
Of people that believe as Fred does here.
Yeah.
And all I'm doing is bringing this book to your attention. To
right.
open
you
your
see,
mind. Now,
see,
if you don't want to believe it, that's fine.
You see, people
but
don't realize.
You challenge, Bill, I think you need to challenge this, if you really want to, with competent people in your show also, rather than just the call-ins.
You see,
if you'd like to give one point of view and push that. Because that's the
well, I'm letting you have your point of view there.
I'm not a competent person to deal with this, Bill.
Yeah, but you have a question that you want answered, and a fair one there.
Mm-hmm.
I can't find anyone who will come on here and...
That must say something.
I can't find anyone who will do it.
To me, that says something. No one wants to challenge this kind of nonsense, is what it tells me.
Well, it's not more than nonsense. They're just not ready to do it. It's like, for instance, we had the Gladdens on. We tried to find some people who were... supposedly schooled in the etymology of the Bible. They wouldn't get on with them because they couldn't disagree with the etymology that the Gladdens had on.
Well, you can see whatever you want to see in these things.
Yes, sure you
can. That's the bottom line. Mr. Steckland chooses to see, and you choose to believe, although sometimes I wonder if you really do, but he chooses to believe that there's buildings up there. And
well, my point is to bring you some information that you can accept, or perhaps it'll cause you to... become very curious and look into it yourself. Is there more to it?
Well, I appreciate you saying information rather than fact, because right now I think it's just Mr. Steckland's information.
By the way, I have taken a number of the photographs, not only those that Fred has, but a number of other ones as well. And I have quite a group of people who are involved in the movie industry. They're involved in photography and photogrammetrics that look at them very closely, and they're quite convinced.
I'd like to have some scientists that are convinced, and maybe I'll be convinced.
Well, I mentioned Laura Chatelain before, who was in charge of the Apollo communication. The French scientist who wrote the book, Our Ancestors Came From Outer Space, and perhaps Mr. Jenkins can get Mr. Chatelain to come on this program, because he is the expert that you are looking for.
Not someone who wrote a book, Our Ancestors Came From Outer Space.
But he happened to also be a high official at NASA.
That's correct, and he was responsible for the communication of the Apollo spaceflight. So if he doesn't know what he's talking about, then there's no hope, isn't
anyone
there?
Anyone who writes a book like that, I think, would tend to be on your side. I'm looking for a competent scientist who is not necessarily on your side, who could debate you over the validity of the photographs and what's up on the moon.
There are thousands of them, sir.
Thousands of them,
that's right.
I wish I could read about this in the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal or Time Magazine. I wish I could read about it in a reputable publication.
Well, like I say, I hope...
Well, actually, in a publication that...
Actually, those people have all had something, have printed things about this.
Mm-hmm.
They have printed about UFO sightings and Mr. Carter's ex-president sightings of unidentified flying objects.
But now you're saying there's identified things on the moon that are floating around, that are building. We're not talking about unidentified anymore. You're identifying them.
No,
you don't know where they're from.
We don't know where they're from.
But
you're
identifying them as buildings, as machines. As
well, I said, remember what I said? The astronomers have sent me pictures of constructions which look like a Tesla coil, and a Van de Graaff generator, and they're thousands. Yeah, and they are thousands of feet high, and they stand there on the mountain ridge of Cape Agaram. Nobody can understand why that thing stands there.
I like that phrase you use, "look like." You can say that, and I'll accept that. There are things on the moon that look like my Aunt Bessie. I'll accept that they look like to you.
To other astronomers as well.
On December 4th, Mike, I invite you to come down to the Los Angeles Convention Center. I'll be down there doing a lecture in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll have some of these pictures, some blown-up ones. And one of them I think you'll find extremely interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Here is a very rough terrain. It's not in Fred's book here. But there is a flattened-out place in this rough terrain of the moon, and there sits a very huge dish antenna. It's about a mile and an eighth across.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a dish antenna.
We don't
make them that big.
No doubt about it. There's a dish antenna on the moon that somebody put up there, but it wasn't us.
Well, have you ever seen one a mile and eighth across?
I've seen pictures of dish antennas. I don't know if I've seen one a mile and an eighth across. But
you'll see one down at the Los Angeles Convention Center on December 4th.
Okay, Bill. Stimulating show.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Mike. We'll be back in just a moment. And Fred Steckling is with me. I want to say something about callers like we had, Mike, and the one earlier who... or challenging our guest and even challenging me. That's certainly welcome. I think that's part of the show, and I think it should be done, and I respect them for feeling the way they do and making the contribution that they do and the suggestions they put on the show. It's perfectly all right with me. I sometimes get worried about the fact that there are not enough challenging calls come into the material that we're talking about here, because we are talking about things quite often that are outside of the norm or the ordinary from what you ordinarily hear on the radio. It's a little bit difficult to accept. The kind of show I run, by the way, is not a confrontation show, me and my guest. It's a forum for the guest to display his wares or the object of his research. We just make every effort to make sure you can't take too many pot shots at the guest, that the guest academia is all right, his research is all right, and he'll stand up on his own. You don't have to agree with him at all, but we're trying to present you with some new ideas. We certainly don't mind the challenging calls, and welcome them. And from those, perhaps we can learn even more about how to better please each and every one of you with what we do on this show. So
constructive criticism.
Constructive criticism is good, and constructive suggestions are good. And if we're falling short of the mark and presenting the kind of program you want, that's good to know, too.
Right.
All of that is helpful. So please feel free. If you disagree with Fred, if you don't think that what he's saying is true, you get in there, and if you think I'm doing it wrong, and if I'm taking too much of a stand myself, fine. You know, our life is an open book here. I don't have any secrets from you. Okay, Craig is on the line. Craig, what's on your mind?
Yes, hi, Bill, and Fred, I guess I'll be taking up kind of where the last caller left off. I'll be offering you some constructive criticism.
Oh, well, I'm always getting it.
Yeah. First of all, this is a kind of a minor point, but I think it ought to be pointed out that for many years, as you well know, many reputable, prominent astronomers, including, of course, Lowell, who was the originator of the idea, believed that there was a vast network of I can't say man-made, but Martian-made canals on the surface of the planet Mars.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really only very recently that we came to the conclusion that...
They weren't there.
They weren't there, that's right. And it just goes to show that you can look at things, at pictures, photographic plates through a telescope, and see things that are not there. Now, I would suggest, if you want something approaching conclusive evidence, that rather than giving us still photographs, you either produce or locate either a motion picture or something approximating that, something like a time-lapse photography that would give very clear evidence of motion of these objects that you claim are there.
Well, we have some in that book, The Motion of a Cloud Over One of the Craters. This was taken, I guess it's, you could call it time-lapse photography in a way, but it was made by one orbital flight over the crater and then the next orbital flight, which was not that much later. You can definitely see a movement of the cloud.
I think we're talking about too much lapse of time there, though,
you can see that the cloud moved over the crater. It had almost covered it, the first orbit, and the next orbit it was only half covered.
Well, I don't know. I would still want something with less of a time interval between photographs and a series of photographs that would approach...
If we just could get those things to stop still in synchronous orbit above the moon, that would be a good idea.
Okay, let me suggest something else now. You've been saying, that the reputable astronomers won't come out and say anything positive or supportive about this because their jobs are on the line or their professional reputation.
Or maybe they just don't believe it.
Well, whatever the case may be. What about a person such as... J. Allen Hynek, he is a very reputable astronomer, and yet he has felt able to come out and support his contention that there are UFO flying saucers, etc.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why would he not be willing to at least give you a good hearing on this?
Well, I talked to J. Allen Hynek on this show about a year ago, and we did touch upon the things that are on the moon as an astronomer, and he... as I recall, said that he was aware of a great deal of body of research about, particularly from the NASA photographs, both from the Apollo missions and from the orbiters that were up there, that there is a lot to support some of the contentions. He thought that perhaps there's a lot of reaching going on for those people who had looked at them and analyzed them, that they wanted to see some things that perhaps could be explained naturally, but there were also a lot of very unusual features that certainly suggest that there is a lot of engineered artifacts up there.
Well, Fred, can you tell me, have you approached any people such as Dr. Hynek?
Well, that's who I was talking about.
No, I'm talking to Fred.
Oh, to Fred. Okay.
Yes, well, I have not approached him, but I know people that have given him my book, and I'm still waiting for a report on his part.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So far, the only scientists that have read my book are Dr. Bell and a couple of other people back east. But not really the top people that I would like to. I'm working on that right now in the promotion of this book.
Okay, I think that's an important thing for you to do. I'll get off. I just want to tell you, Bill, if you want to put me on hold for your producer, I can give you a lead for a scientist who had a weekly program dealing with science on another radio station. He's heard your program, and he's done work in astronomy. He had a paper published recently in the journal Nature. And I would think he might be interested in either appearing on your program with Fred or something of that nature.
All right. Very good. We will put you on hold, and would you get that information from him?
Sure. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Craig. Appreciate that. Craig's one of the bright young men that calls in. I have a couple of them out there that really put you to the test every time they call in. Love to see it. We'll be back in just a moment with Fred Steckling. I'm Bill Jenkins.
Okay.
We'll make another appearance on the Open Mind Show, and we will go very deeply into the latest in the free energy devices that are out, the new free energy sources, the tachyon field converter. Some extremely exciting things are happening in the field of energy, and why the whole electromagnetic theory is being changed, and whatever it is, we may touch on those exotic new Tesla weapons that both the United States and the Soviet Union have that make the neutron bomb look like a firecracker compared to what we really can do. Tom Bearden next week. Following that, Shirley MacLaine will be in studio, and we'll have a chance to talk to her about her metaphysical experiences as she's had in her new book called Out on the Limb. Shirley is postponing a trip to Europe to spend a couple of hours with you and me. That'll be on the 1st of October. Dr. Lawrence Boren will be here following week, and then we'll have Bob Monroe of the Monroe Institute of Applied Sciences. We'll get back again to the phenomenon of the out-of-body experience, moving into the past and the future in that mode. How do you get the book, Fred? Let's give that address one more time, or how they can contact you if they want to
okay,
and find out more about it.
For those people that are interested to obtain this book and to get this information of the basis on the moon, they may write to GAF International Publishers, P.O. Box 1722, Vista, California, 92083. The price of the book is $9.95 and $1 for postage and handling, and I can be reached to that address as well.
Alien bases on the moon.
And I'm open for constructive criticism, and I will try to get together with these people that have constructive criticism and can show me photographs where I made an error, which is possible. None of us are perfect. There are no perfect people living on Earth or any place else, I believe.
That's what I keep telling George Green and Wally Sherman around here.
Not even those with a degree are perfect.
No, they're not. Okay, Bob, you're on. What's on your mind?
Hello, Mr. Jenkins and Fred.
Yes.
First, I want to thank you, Mr. Jenkins. Your show is good therapy for our minds. It takes our minds off of world problems.
Oh, I tell you, I get so tired of those world problems, I'd rather deal with what's going on the moon just for a change.
I like it. My question is, could they place a telescope on the moon so that telescopes on Earth could target into the moon telescope that is mobile and search the moon and other planets so we could see some of these things on television?
Hmm.
Yes, you could, but they won't.
They won't do it.
They won't do it.
We've made some inroads. We've got a television. I've got a telescope in space now, and thanks to it, we were able to discover, would you believe, another solar system, which is in orbit around the star Vega. Hopefully, I think one of the far-reaching plans of NASA is to put a good telescope on the moon, which will give us a much clearer picture of where we are and what is out there.
The purpose would be for Palomar, Caltech, and others to gain whatever they could in further science, but then we could also probably see it on television.
Well, during the landings on of the Apollo flights, there have been objects or vehicles or aerial vehicles or UFOs, whatever you want to call them, have been seen, sometimes for a few seconds, floating around behind the Apollo lander. And then after a rerun, a few minutes later, this was cut out, you see. So,
Well, I certainly thank you for the show and all of the news that I get here.
You see, I have a report here which is kind of an interesting one. It says here when Apollo 12 landed on the moon, they walked over to the Surveyor spacecraft, Surveyor 3, which had landed by remote control 2.5 years earlier. This Surveyor was completely sterilized on Earth. Yet when the camera was taken back to Earth, they found living bacteria, whole colonies of them, streaming outward from the Surveyor 3 camera.
I'm sure the people want to get all the news they can get, even from your book.
Well, I think we deserve all the news we can get because we paid for it.
Yes.
Okay?
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much, Bob, for your question. And I think we have Dan on the line. Dan?
Yes. Hi there, Fred. I was wondering if Fred is familiar with the rumor that I became aware of in 1979, an article in the newspaper which stated that when Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin, the Apollo 11, landed on the moon, when the module landed at the bottom of a crater, two alien spacecraft appeared at the crater rim, and that furthermore, Buzz Aldrin took movie film of these craft, and that they departed just before Armstrong stepped on the moon. Are you familiar with that?
Yes. Maurice Chatelain, the NASA scientist who wrote this book that I mentioned earlier, he states that too, and a couple of other people have did some research. They found that whenever the astronauts were transmitting to Earth, they did not use the proper channels or the communication channels, but they used other channels such as the ones that transmit heartbeat or the medical channels.
Yeah.
And so Dr. Fred Bell, who studied some of these tapes that were released by the Freedom of Information Act later on, he said that definitely there's evidence that they had encountered the UFOs on the moon.
Mm-hmm. It also states that there were noise disturbances on their radios. What do you think that is? Is that the possibly the aliens trying to communicate to the astronauts, or
just
communication being intercepted?
Perhaps being intercepted, yes.
Uh-huh.
I have no way of knowing. I do remember that Buzz Aldrin was here on KABC not too long ago, and categorically denied anything unusual went on up there.
Mm-hmm.
It says that since 1977, the Russians have known about this. What is their research into this material? Are they keeping up with it? Are they researching it?
Well, what I receive from Europe and information, they are very serious about UFO research. Of course, they accused the United States in the early days that we sent them secret weapons. Of course, if we had weapons like this, then we wouldn't have to spend $200 billion for defense if we had it made. But they are right now also very seriously researching this, and they have had many sightings in the Soviet Union that leak out, you know, so the Iron Curtain. But not that much is known, should be known, because they're very secretive.
Could this be linked to the reason why the Russians have never really been determined to land on the moon, maybe out of fear, are they
lack of skill as much as anything else, I think.
Yeah, well, that's all speculations. It's hard to say. Perhaps they have been there and didn't tell us, you know, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But they had many spacecraft that reached the moon as well, unmanned ones.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Dan?
Okay, thank you very much, Bill.
Right, thank you for your call. We have Diana on the line. Hi, Diana. I thought we did. Diana, are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
I hear you now.
Okay, I'm calling you about two things. One is about your Castaic experience, which you haven't told us about yet. And we've got to hear about that. And the other one is that I feel that there's not only a conspiracy here in the United States to withhold information from the public. Hello?
Well, let me see.
Hello? Can you hear me?
We hear you fine. Go ahead.
Okay. There's not only they're not only withholding information from the people here in the United States about UFOs and other things similar to that, but they're also withholding the information in Russia. I have a book called The New Soviet Psychic Discoveries, written by two American writers who went over to the Soviet Union, interviewed scientists, and the scientists let them know that at one time they could bring forth this information, and suddenly their government stopped them. But their government did allow these writers to interview the scientists, and this book divulges all this information. They definitely believe there are UFOs.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, they have proof that in 1908 an atomic bomb was exploded, that there was a UFO that came within a certain vicinity and exploded an atomic bomb above the ground, and they even went back and studied all of this evidence.
Well, the evidence is still there from that explosion. But we don't know whether it was an atomic bomb or just exactly what it was.
I'd like to know why all the governments are holding this information back from the people.
So would Fred.
And I feel that the people should be doing something to write their congressmen to say, hey, divulge it, it's about time.
They won't pay any attention to it.
But it's a good idea to write their congressmen to get this opened up to the public.
Well, we've often called for on this show, and I really would like to see it, a full-blown congressional investigation into this matter. But before you can do that, you have to have a presidential pardon or some sort of a statement that releases NASA officials and astronauts from the National Security Vow and contracts, so that they can speak openly and freely without any kind of fear of recrimination from the government against their security or their pensions or any of the other things.
Well,
didn't they have an investigation during the 60s behind closed doors?
Well, if you can call that an investigation, I think we should call that a whitewash more than anything
else.
Yeah,
that was a whitewash, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think the American people need this new investigation.
Well, I'd like to see it happen. I don't know if it will. There are a lot of things that are going on that perhaps the congressman, I think, more important. But as time goes on, I think having this kind of information, you know, properly put forth, a lot of people just won't believe it unless it's they got the imprimatur of the government. But the government just has always felt that, it seems to me, they've listened to the think tanks of the great institutions that feed them with all of this information, that if we were to be officially told that there are aliens in our space and that they have interfered with us for a long time, that it might hurt our psychology and we'd run amok in the streets and tear down our economy and tear down our country and do all sorts of things.
Well, that's why I think your program is so valuable to us. You're bringing it out.
Well,
and you're not on long enough as far as we're concerned.
Well, about Castaic, I did not see anything last night. We went out there, and the folks from Two on the Town went with me, so we had television cameras, and Some of the folks saw one sighting. I just happened to be talking to somebody at the time with my back turned. I didn't see it. But Dr. Viscott did. Some of the others that were with us did see those things. We're going to do it again.
Please do.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
All right. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind. Fred Steckling is with me. We'll be back in just a moment. The Moon, our guest, Fred Steckling, has written a book called Alien Bases on the Moon. Photographs in there. A lot of his interpretation of them, and you have a chance to talk to Fred, and Jeff is on the line to do that. Jeff, what's on your mind tonight?
First of all, I'd like to say, Mr. Steckling, I did get a copy of your book and read it and was very impressed with it. Some of the questions I do have is, if there are alien beings on the Moon and other planets, why has the space exploration, especially here in the United States, now just been limited to the space shuttle? And, you know, why aren't we up there trying to set up space stations and find out who these people are? Well, obviously, there's a lot we can learn from them.
Well, perhaps that's the answer. There's too much we can learn from them. And we are right now not ready for this type of information because it would interfere with our business setups, with our energy setups as we have. They speak so much about free energy, but do we really want it? You perhaps and I, but can the industry today, with the unemployment situation and the economical problems we have, digest such a sudden change? And I think what happens here is that we deliberately are kept in the dark for some time to come yet. We must not forget that inventions such as the television, telephone, radio, and so forth were known in the 1920s, but we found out much later about it when they got good and ready for it and had figured out a way how they can charge us for it. And
well,
that's...
We'll be discussing this next week, in fact, when Tom Bearden is here, Jeff, about, for instance, free energy. Those devices are now in place, and they're being radically developed. Nikola Tesla wanted to give the world free energy back in the at the turn of the century, and was in the process of doing it. And when J.P. Morgan found out about that, who was supporting him as far as his research was concerned, took away all of his funds. He says, you know, the man is crazy who wants to give the world energy. That's something that we can sell.
Also, another question I have is, obviously, in the printing of some of those photographs, there's got to be a lot of the image lost to it. Is there any way you can get copies of those photographs from NASA as you attained?
Yes, you can order them from the Goddard Space Flight Center in Greenbelt, Maryland, code 601, and just...
Are there some in color also?
You can request some of them in color. They have not released any of those, because there you can even detect much easier what is going on there. Just write to them and tell them what numbers you like to have. And if you like to have an enlarged photo, they enlarge it to you, for you 18 inches by 20 and some 24 inches. It costs you about $3 or $4. I spend thousands of dollars in research money to get all this material together that I have in my book.
See, in theory, those pictures belong to the people of the United States. They're public domain, and they should be given to you. Of course, you're probably going to get doctored pictures, but go ahead. And
maybe not, you know.
Maybe not. Right.
Maybe not.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Jeff, thank you very much for coming. Okay. Let me tell you about this. Every year there's a group of people, and it's quite a large group who...
Oh, hello.
Uh-huh.
I called up because I got so excited when that one particular guest you had on that was so skeptical about the subject matter. People are such unbelievers. My daughter saw something in Banning. Yep. Oh, this was quite some time
ago. Do you have a question for our guest, Fred Steckling?
No, I wanted to tell you about the sighting that my daughter saw.
Oh, well, I tell you, we have Fred on the line, and there are some people who want to get to him about the things that are going on the Moon. Could we talk to you some other time about that, Edna?
Well, okay.
All right.
All right, bye.
All right, thank you very much. We have Saeed on the line.
Yes, Bill.
Yes.
We enjoyed having you on the Castaic Lake last night. Hopefully next time we will see something.
Yeah, we just saw one last night, didn't we?
Yeah. Some people saw it, obviously.
Yeah.
Okay, Fred, how is it that suddenly everything on the Moon was canceled out, all the research by Russians and Americans? And isn't that why a big indication that both sides were scared of those intraterrestrials being on the Moon?
Well, this is the opinion of some of the researchers that believe that Apollo 17 was all of a sudden the last one that went to the Moon, not because we didn't find anything there, but we found too much there. And it's not because we can't afford it. The United States is a rich country. We can afford the space program. We should go back to the Moon and thoroughly explore it and let the public know everything that they find. And
that's what they told people, that we cannot afford it.
Well, that wasn't true.
We can afford wars and everything else if we can go to the Moon.
And they could
it was very costly to turn off the Apollo program. The effect that was having on our economy, the new technology that was bringing into the economy, the new jobs that was bringing into the economy, was incredibly enormous and impressive, and for us to turn it off like we did was an extremely costly thing to the American people.
Was it possible that we could move our missile sites to the moon, and with all that research they could do?
I'm sure someone would try to think of something like that, and that's a sad commentary on where we are, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
Okay, Sonny, thank you. It looks like we're just about out of time here for Open Mind tonight. Fred Steckling, your book, Alien Bases on the Moon, is something that causes you to think. There are some photographs in there. You can look at them. You can order them. You've got them listed as to what they are. Go over it yourself. And all we're trying to do here is to get people to become aware of the fact that there may be more to the moon than we're led to believe. And it's up to each of us as individuals, as Americans, to check into it as best we can. And there are resources that we all have. And I appreciate your book. If it's all true, that's wonderful, but at least you've caused people to think. All right?
Thank you. That's right. That's what I want them to do, and I want them to get to order the photographs and to show NASA that they show an interest in the space program and that they are interested in what we found.
Okay, good. And we have to go. Our time is up. We'll see you again. Bye.
Recently...